Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring this podcast. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System, you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. At hundreds of locations across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unifiedhealing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE System.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, the number one podcast network for today's Kansas City sports fans. With former players from your favorite teams, informed perspectives, and former insiders, this is the place for you. You can find us wherever you listen to podcasts or on our YouTube channel, all over social media, or our morning newsletter, KCSN Daily, dedicated to your Kansas City Chiefs. KC Sports Network is proudly presented by Emprise Bank, your partner in possible.
What's up, y'all? This is One Royal Way here on Kansas City Sports Network. My name is Joel Penfield. Thank you so much for tuning into this episode. Joining me tonight is Jared Perkins from Prospects Live, Major League University, and Royals Farm Report, one of our main writers over there. How's it going, Jared?
Good. How are you doing? I did a lot of college baseball coverage, so I got a little bit of distraction from the Royals, but ready to get back.
I was locked into regionals in the Women's College World Series over the last week, so that's been my focus. Obviously, still paid attention to the Big League Club for the purposes of this show, but I had to take a break from watching a team that's 18-37 at this point. I'm not going to put myself through that day in, day out.
Good for your mental health.
Yeah, speaking of that, so you're a two-time guest on the show. The last time we had you on, it was you, me, and Austin Beiler from Major League University, the founder of the organization. We had a conversation about baseball, mental health, and all of that. That is one of my favorite episodes I've ever recorded of the hundreds of podcast episodes that I've ever done. Tuck, if you wouldn't mind putting that episode and linking it in the description, if you haven't listened to that yet, please do. It was an incredible conversation, and hope that we can get that done for you guys, and hopefully you guys were able to listen to it if you haven't heard it already. This show also is brought to you by Kansas City Strength and Conditioning, as always, and we'll hear a quick word from them here in just a moment.
From the beginning, we knew right away that we wanted to do strength conditioning and a throwing program for the baseball and softball community. It wasn't something we were trying to back into or all of a sudden learn. We knew we were really good at these coaching these skills from the get-go, and the fact that we're in the same business and the employees are all on the same page, you know, we can write a program based off of what a kid needs, not just getting him stronger or faster from a general sense. It's what does this kid need? On the pitching end, we can say, hey, this kid needs such and such. He needs to do this or that better. A lot of times it turns out it's not something that needs to be fixed in the baseball cage or on the throwing mound. It actually needs to be fixed in the weight room.
Thank you, as always, to Kansas City Strength and Conditioning for sponsoring this show. Be sure to go check them out if you have a baseball or softball player in the area that needs a place to train. All right, Jared, so we'll do a little wrap of the last week for the Royals. They played two tough series. I mean, this team is not good. We'll just call a spade, but playing the Astros and the Blue Jays back-to-back, even on a homestand, that's not easy. They're able to sneak out wins in each room, so they didn't get swept. So if we want to try and find any sort of positivity, I think there's that 6-0 win on the Saturday game against Houston, and then 8-4 win in the day game getaway day Wednesday at Kauffman Stadium on Wednesday against the Blue Jays. So what were some of your overall thoughts from anything that you saw over the last week, if you were able to see much? I know you were locked into the College Park Regional there out in Maryland, but what have you thought about the last week for the Royals?
Yeah, I think the two wins that they got, at least, it was nice to see Chris Bubik come back up to the big leagues, bounce back, throw five innings, no runs, three walks. So it was good to see him come back up and flash some of his dominance as he's had before. And same thing with Brady Singer. He struggled a little bit, gave up three earned, eight hits against the Blue Jays, but that's a high-powered Blue Jays offense. So can't like really fault him there for giving up three earned. That lineup's just absolutely loaded. But there's some positivities seeing these arms come back up from AAA, starting to show them flash some dominance that they didn't necessarily have at the beginning of the year. So you kind of hold your breath and hope that that keeps rolling.
Yeah, definitely. It was interesting to watch Chris Bubich. I went back and watched his start the next day. And just seeing the fastball usage, it was down from what we've seen. He was throwing north of 50% of the time from his time prior to his demotion down to Omaha. And now he was throwing a slider a little bit more. He was working in the changeup more and throwing his fastball less. It seemed to be a little more effective. The control and command is still not spectacular with the three walks, but we've seen him not get out of first innings and the command completely fail him. So that didn't seem to be the case. So for him to get through five shutout as well, that is certainly a sign of good things to come. I didn't think Brady Singer had his best stuff yesterday, but if you really want to try and spin this a little bit, those types of outings, if you watch the game at all, for anybody to watch it on the YouTube broadcast, there were some innings where he was giving up some dink and dunk hits that just barely got through the shift, or in the fifth inning specifically, a ball kind of fell between Witt, Nicky, and Carlos Santana in shallow right field. Those types of hits and those types of things for Brady Singer, those mistakes compound, and he's not able to get out of an inning. But he was able to get a strikeout and a flyout to end that fifth inning right after that hit. I don't think last year Brady Singer gets out of that inning clean and has only gives up three runs. So if there is any sort of positive you can really take away on a day when he really didn't have his best stuff most of the day, the mental side for him seems to really be clicking and being able to keep his emotions in check. Cause he's a highly emotional guy, and there's nothing wrong with that. There are pitchers that are able to use that effectively. So it seems like he's being able to channel that a lot better, which is leading to better results, even when he doesn't have his A+ stuff.
Yeah, and I think that's a huge positive, because you think about it in terms of just emotions in general, like how you can have those emotional reactions, but how are you going to use them to your advantage? And I think he's finding ways to better himself on the mound and his mound presence, which is great in terms of pitchability and things like that. And it's just, you watch the fastball command, it's elite, or not elite, but it's getting so much better. He just is able to pinpoint his fastball in the zone where he needs to. He's got his third pitch in the changeup, which keeps hitters off balance, and he's got his nice put away slider. And so if those things can keep developing at his young age, like, there's potential to be a number three starter there, number two starter at the best. So you like to see those things moving forward and hope he keeps kind of progressing on them.
Yeah. I didn't realize it, but it happened last year too, even though he wasn't spectacular. And even this year where he's been really solid, he has the highest called strike percentage in the major leagues. Yeah. And I think a lot of that is due to the run that he gets on his fastball, able to couple that with the slider. And he got some ugly swings on the slider early. And some of that is, even though he's not throwing his changeup a lot, people have seen like the shape of it. That's actually a really good pitch. So guys are having to think about it now when they're in the box. Like, could he go to this 1-1? And then he does, and he breaks off the slider, and he's getting a swing in the ball that's in the other batter's box.
Yeah.
So even just the thought of having that third pitch there, that wasn't there last year. It was a 50-50 guess, and guys would hammer it because they could just get their ace swing off because they knew they would hit one or the other. They didn't have that this past. They haven't had that this year, and Brady Singer's been a lot more effective. Funny how that works, being able to actually have an effective third pitch as a starter. What a concept. On the hitting side, Bobby has really struggled the last week or so. I think he was in the middle of a 2-for-24 coming into Wednesday, and then he gets a walk, two knocks, scorched the ball. And even during that stretch where he wasn't hitting the ball well, he would still have once every couple of games the ball that was 105 or higher. I think in that the first game of that Blue Jays series had a line out to left, ball hit a ball 113 miles an hour. So he's still getting his ace swings off.
Yeah.
Those results will come as he continues to progress. He put together some great at bats yesterday. I think we're seeing the effects of Alex Zumwalt and Mike Tozar as the hitting coaches really start to to form. Guys are putting together a lot better at bats on the whole. We're not seeing it, you know, compound in the lineup where 1 through 9 are putting together all, but you'll see it throughout the game that even Salvi at times, he's not swinging at the high fastball. The guys are giving him 1-0 or 0-1. You know, he's still going to swing a lot. That's just what he does. But I noticed he laid off some pitches that in the past he swung at a lot.
Yeah.
You still see, like, the Royals had 4 walks in the first inning against Yusei Kikuchi. Now, Kikuchi was all over the place. But how often have we seen guys, the Royals bail out guys that aren't, you know, that are all over the place, but they're still swinging? That wasn't the case. They were able to chase a guy in the first inning and get a couple of runs off him. That's signs of improvement, and I'll take that right now. We don't have a lot of positive stuff to really look to, but little things like that, it seems like, are trending in the right direction, if nothing else.
Yeah, and I understand that Royals fans really want Bobby Witt Jr. to be the superstar right off the bat, but you got to remember, he's like a 21-year-old hitting in the 3-hole. Like, mm-hmm. This is his first year of professional baseball, and so you want to see incremental improvements like he has been. He's going to go through his slumps as he tries to get adjusted to the big leagues, but unless you see kind of in terms of like a Jared Kelenic that we talked about before the show, where he had to get sent back down to AAA, the strikeout rates are super high and things like that. But you're seeing incremental improvements in terms of Bobby Witt Jr.'s game. The defense, of course, amazing, brilliant. But those are the things you want to see in a rookie. You want to see those movements forward, and I think we're seeing it. And I think Royals fans got to, unfortunately, just have to be patient with a kid who's just making his first year in the show.
Yeah, and I'll give some credit here where I haven't given a lot of credit this season, but the Wednesday game, Carlos Santana went 4-for-4 with a walk, got on all 5 times. And I know, like, there's a certain part of Royals fans that are like, good for him, but also crap. That means Vinny's stuck in AAA for another 2 weeks because Carlos Santana just bought him some more time in the lineup. But that said, like, the Royals have talked about, they want to try and bump his trade value. Like, if that's really what they want to do, I don't think the Royals – let me backtrack. I don't think the Royals have outright said that, but I think that's what they're waiting on. It's almost like Jorge Soler last year. Like, he was one of the worst hitters in baseball, but he had a 10-day stretch where he got hot. They were able to trade him. I'm not going to say that Carlos Santana can go on that type of stretch, but if he can string together a few of those games a week, the easier it would be for a team that is like, sure, why not? And go get a veteran presence for a contending team that Carlos Santana could provide as a bench bat of some sort. But you need, at this point, Vinny and Carlos Santana cannot coexist in the same lineup. So one has to give, and it really is Carlos Santana either being let go or traded before a guy like Vinny or Nick Prado can come up. So you, as a Royals fan, you want Carlos Santana to play well right now because a team will be more willing to take him on, and maybe a change of scenery helps.
Yeah, and I mean, it's hard because you look at the amount of money the Royals are paying him. It's kind of like the Omar Infante situation that they had a few years ago, where he's making, what, $10 million a year, and he's not performing and producing up to the level that he used to. And it's not necessarily Carlos Santana's fault. It's his age. I mean, he's just getting older. He can't catch up to the fastball like he used to be able to. He's still getting on base, and he's still walking, and he's still trying to be productive in that sense. But as you get older, you all of a sudden can't read the ball as much as well as you could when you were 10 years younger. So there's some of that coming into play as well.
Certainly. And I mean, it is really tough watching this team at times. I mean, the first 2 games of the Blue Jays series, it felt like there was no life at all. I'm not going to say that they quit on, you know, Mike Matheny and the organization, but it was hard to watch. So it was good to see them find a way to get out of that series with a win and put up a lot of runs against a solid team that I think it's going to be in October. I was really high on the Blue Jays coming into the season, and really also on that Saturday game to get no damage out of Vlad. I think that was a big deal because he hit a couple of bombs early in the series. So adjustments all around, at least there's going to be a ton of growing pains.
Yeah.
We're going to watch a lot of bad baseball. So I understand that you're probably listening to this thinking I'm grasping at straws, but I don't need to come on here for 4 months and just trash the team and feel terrible about where we're at. Like, it's just not worth it. Now they're playing the Orioles. They're the first game of 4-gamer as we're recording right now. I hate that at this point we're just like, just split, please.
Yeah.
And it feels like even that isn't an easy ask. But
already down 1-0, so that helps.
The fact that like that's kind of where we're at this season. If the Royals get a split with the Baltimore Orioles, I'm feeling really good going into next Monday.
The Baltimore Orioles are throwing out Jordan Lyles right now. So that's where you got to think about.
He's still in the league?
Yeah, he's there. He's hanging around.
Oh, boy.
But at least Chris Bubik's on the mound. He seems to be throwing pretty well coming into the third. But you never thought when we started the season that we'd be just wishing for a split with the Baltimore Orioles. But here we are. And, hey, you just got to hope for the best.
I mean, I remember last year coming out of the All-Star break and the Royals were not playing great. But we thought, oh, they get the Orioles right out. Perfect. And they got swept.
Yeah.
So it would not shock me if they still manage to lose 3 out of 4 at home in this one. But if they can get a split, at least that gets them to 20 wins on the year, the beginning of June.
Progress.
It's something, man. We got to take our W's where we can get them. They're on pace for 100 losses, over 100 losses. So any win at this point is just we're all feeling good. The Royals fans really want the young guys to come up. I do. Alex does. Josh does. You do. And there's so many of them that it feels like we have – and kind of the argument is, well, where are you going to put all of them? And I think there's a great place to put all. I think there are certainly ways you could do it. And a lot of it is going to come when roster moves are made. Like, I think eventually when either Carlos Santana is let go or traded, then there's a spot. When Ryan O'Hearn, who hasn't played in, I think, a week, is eventually let go, then you have an opportunity. When Andrew Benintendi should get traded because he's playing really well, there's an opportunity there. I think there's going to be a time later this year where they're going to have Prado and Vinny up at the same time. You're going to have Prado in left with Isbell and, I don't know, pick a right fielder. You got
maybe Olivares if he's healthy.
Yeah, maybe Olivares if he's healthy. But even then, you could put MJ out there. He's played out there and he's been serviceable. You still have, at third base, you could throw Bobby. You could throw Bobby at third if you want to put him there. You got Nicky. You can put Whit Merrifield at second if you want to keep the stupid consecutive game streak going. Salvi behind the plate and Vinny at first base. And that would, I think, get at least fans go, that it may not be the greatest lineup on the planet. They may not, it may lose every game, but at least fans would go, hey, they're giving these guys the opportunity. And I think that's what we all want right now is just to see these guys get the opportunity. And there are places and times to do it. And it's going to happen. It should, at least.
Yeah. And it's hard because I think everybody thinks about trading Whit Merrifield at the trade deadline. And
it's not happening.
No. But even if they don't, then you just look at the way Nicky Lopez is performing. Yes, he's great defensively, but he's hitting .216 on the season. You can slide Whit Merrifield into second base. You can open up spots for Isbell, Olivares, and Prado to play out there and have that as your starting outfield. So even if Whit Merrifield sticks around, I mean, you got a spot for him at second base. It's not like you're blocking anybody by putting him there. And so there's an opportunity to put him into the infield and maybe make platoon Nicky Lopez at third base with Emmanuel Rivera. I mean, there's an opportunity there because you're not going to see Mondesi back this year in order to force Bobby Witt Jr. back to third base. So you got the spots. You just got to find ways to get him up.
Yeah, and I hope that they still find a way to do that. I'm not going to get my hopes up, to be honest, because this front office seems hell-bent on keeping what they have as their nucleus together, which isn't winning baseball. It's clearly not working. So as I've talked about ad nauseum for most of the season, is make changes where you can and just do something different, and maybe it'll lead to more wins.
Yeah,
I have contended all year the best Royals team this year is getting all of the young guys up and putting them in the lineup because they are better than some of the veterans you've been running out there all season and for the last 2 years. They're just better baseball players. I know they're getting their feet wet in the big leagues. I don't care. They're better baseball players. And if you really want to try and be good in 2 years, getting these guys at bats now is going to be a benefit to them.
Yeah, and I agree. And it's like I love having Michael A. Taylor out in center field. He's great defensively and he's producing enough in terms of the bat, but it's like when you have a guy like Michael A. Taylor, you want him hitting eighth or ninth every single day. And you want to have guys around him who are going to produce in the lineup. If you expect a lot of offense out of Michael A. Taylor, you're not going to get it. And so he's a great piece to have if you have pieces around him, but they don't have anything around him in order to kind of be able to be like, okay, we can have him in the bottom of our lineup. Right now, they just don't have those pieces.
Yeah, so speaking of trade candidates, Andrew Benintendi's the obvious one, and he's already been getting floated around as he should. I wouldn't want to make a trade with the Padres, but making a move would be very obvious for Andrew Benintendi. Michael and Taylor could be a sneaky trade candidate.
Yeah.
A team that's desperate for a fourth outfielder could get him, and he could actually have a really good impact on a playoff team.
Yeah.
He has his weighted runs created plus right now is 114. And that's after coming off the COVID IL. He has hit the ball really, really well. Mm-hmm. And Royals had a game earlier this week where they had two hits. He was both of them. And they also had a walk, and he was the only walk. He was the only dude that got on base. He's putting together solid at bats. He's doubled his walk rate. He's cut his strikeout rate from last year and still playing a great center field. And he has another year of control. So a team that really wants to solidify their bench, or somebody gets hurt and you really need a good defensive center fielder in a pinch, Michael A. Taylor is a perfect candidate for that. But because of the extra year tagged on him, I don't think the Royals do it, because it'd be too logical, frankly, to make a trade for Michael A. Taylor. But he's a guy that certainly would have value come July 31st.
Yeah, and if you can get like a top 15 prospect for him somehow, I mean, it makes sense. But
depends on how desperate a team is. If it's like a Ronald Acuna situation where their starting center fielder is out and done for the year and they just need somebody, certainly you could probably get a team to overpay for it. I'm not going to expect a ton of return. Just any return for him would be huge. I will expect a nice return for Andrew Benintendi.
Yeah.
Especially if you can pair him with like a reliever.
That's what I was thinking.
They just left town, but the Blue Jays need a good left fielder. Lourdes Gurriel has not been that fantastic this year. Reinald Tapia is, I mean, I know he had a ball out into the fountains, but he's not amazing. I think that could be somebody that you go and you could trade him to the Blue Jays. I would go and try and pair Andrew Benintendi with one of Staumont or Barlow and try and go get Jordan Groshans and maybe like a CJ Van Eyck if you can get a team to really get them to really pay up if they're that desperate, and we'll call it profit and go.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it's like, because I don't think the Blue Jays are going to part with Gabriel Moreno or Elvis Martinez. I think those two guys are going to kind of stick around. You mentioned the Padres earlier. It's like, are they really going to part with CJ Abrams or Robert Hassel to get Andrew Benintendi?
Jackson Merrill is the guy that Alex and I have talked about. And I would be cool with that. But like, so here's the thing, is if the Royals do want to be competitive, they think that the window is not, obviously not this year, but it's coming close. Jordan Groshans is in AAA and killing it right now. That could be your third baseman next year. Mm-hmm. You make the trade in on August 5th. All right, dude, let's go.
Yeah.
And come on up to the big leagues and be the everyday third baseman. And then you have the left side of your infield locked down for the next 6 years.
Yeah. I mean, Jordan Groshans, he kind of flew under the radar and dropped in prospect ratings because he had a bad year last year. But like you said, he's off to a hot start this year and he could provide some value. One guy I have a question on for you is trade value. What do you think about Hunter Dozier? Do you think he's got some value, or do you think the Royals even try to move on after signing that extension?
I don't think the Royals try to move on after signing him to that extension. You certainly could trade that contract.
Yeah.
It's not expensive at all.
Yeah.
But I mean, where do you put him defensively? Because mm-hmm. I don't think teams are going to trade for him as a DH. He's not good at third. He's not good at first. He's not good at right. I don't know where you put him.
He's like a roster clog.
Yeah, he is. And the thing is, he's actually been decent this year. So it's not like you're trading for a bad guy, but I don't think the Royals try and move him. I think he's 30. So you're not trading for a young guy that you can, you know, with some upside that you can go. I think he is who he is. And I just don't know. I don't know what value he would have outside the Royals. It's kind of the same thing with Whit Merrifield.
Yeah.
I think the Royals value both of those guys more than other teams value them.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not going to get the type of prospect haul back that the Royals would want. So I don't think that move would ever happen.
Yeah. Cause you think about the times that talked about trading Whit Merrifield in the past, the ask was super high. And that's why a lot of teams were just like, no, we're not even going to meet it.
The Mariners was in his peak. The Mariners really wanted him at the deadline last year, but the Royals asked for the moon. And I could probably think of the guys that they asked for. It wasn't
George Kirby.
They probably asked for Kirby. I bet they asked for what's the guy's name? Not Austin Shenton. There's another outfielder. I can't think of his name, but
not Julio Rodriguez.
Not Julio. Kid played at A&M.
Oh, Zach DeLoach.
Yes, DeLoach. That's it.
Yeah. Yeah, I could see that. And it's just like at this point, his value is lower than it is this year. So are they going to get the value that they want back in return for him this year? I don't know. But how many years left does Merrifield have on his contract?
I think this is the last year. I think they picked up his option for next year.
Okay.
I think, and then there's a, yeah, I think it's next year. And then there's like a really expensive option in 24. So if nothing else, I think next year is the last year with Merrifield. So that's kind of how I'm looking at it.
I feel like a team would be easily interested in taking on Merrifield for a playoff run, but that might be, I know he struggled to begin the year, but he's really gotten turned it around in the last few games. And so it's just like, I feel like there's enough talent there that some team would be like, but will the Royals actually part with
it? I hope the thing is, just for Whit Merrifield's sake, and he's been one of my favorite players in the organization since he came up. I like, there is something to the Bobby Witt Juniors of the world that can just wake up, roll out of bed and rake.
Yeah.
There is something to the guys like Whit Merrifield who have to grind for every at bat and every opportunity to make it to the big leagues and take 6 years in the minors as a college senior to get up and have his opportunity and then turn himself into an all-star. Like those are the types of dudes that I, as a baseball fan and like romantic of the game, that I have a lot of respect for.
Yeah.
And some of my favorite players ever are guys like that. But I want him to go and play playoff baseball before his career is over.
Yeah.
And
so that'd be awesome.
I mean, he's been on horrendous baseball teams his entire career.
Mm-hmm.
Because by the time he had really solidified himself as a dude in the big leagues, it was 2018 and the Royals were losing 100 games.
Yeah.
So I want him to go and have one last opportunity before he's out of his prime, which he's already getting out of because he's 33. I want to see that happen. Yeah. I don't think it'll happen, but I want to see it happen just for his sake.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I'd cheer for that team, whatever he went to, and hope that they would pull it off.
Exactly. Just so he gets a taste of it.
Yeah.
If nothing else, right? I don't know what team would want him. I don't know what team has a hole where he can go and fit. But
yeah,
could be something fun to follow. All right, so on the back half of this episode, Jared works for Prospects Live, so we're going to talk a lot about the MLB draft, which is coming up in about a month or so, and just kind of start to get you guys prepped for it a little bit. On this side, we're going to hammer it a ton on Royals Farm Report, but wanted to talk about it on this show as well. Before we do that, if you are looking for the best selection for Royals tickets, be sure to check out our friends at Tickets for Less. At ticketsforless.com, you'll find the best selection of Royals tickets at the best prices, and you'll never pay outrageous per-ticket service fees like you do on other sites out there. Plus, use our exclusive partner code to save even more on your tickets. Simply use promo code KCSN22 at ticketsforless.com to save on any Royals ticket order. That code again is KCSN22. Memories for life start at ticketsforless.com. All right, Jared. So, like I said, the MLB draft coming up here. I believe it's July 17th is the first round, and I want to start to get Royals fans prepped for this. The Royals pick in the 9th overall pick. There are so many different strategies to the MLB draft. It is entirely different from the NFL draft. And I want people to understand that. And that's why I want to talk about this specifically on the Big League Show for people that may not follow the minor league system as much. If you've watched Kent and Craig and Maddie with the NFL draft coverage and the KCSN draft guide and all that, it's a completely different animal in the MLB side, because you're not drafting guys that are going to be on your team right now. You're drafting guys that are going to be on your team in 2 to 3 years from now. You're not necessarily drafting for need. You're drafting the best player available or the best player available at the value. There's so many different ways to it that I hope that I can kind of hammer this home. What are some of your draft strategies you think the Royals – what do you think the Royals should do, I guess, is the best way to put it. Where would you go if you were Dayton Moore with the 9th pick?
Yeah.
Not necessarily player, but like your process.
Yeah. So I think for me, it's just looking at the way the Royals have drafted in the past, it's been a lot of arms. So like you look at the Brady Singer draft where you had Brady Singer, Jackson Coward, Jonathan Bolin. The list goes on in terms of arms. And then last year's draft as well, where they got Mazzucato and Ben Kudra in the first two picks. I want to see him go with a bat this time. Mm-hmm. It would be nice to see a college bat that's a little bit more polished, just because if the Royals window's technically in the next 3 to 4 years, you're going to want a college bat that's going to be quick and making it to the big leagues. Because it's not like they have the 1-1 or the 1-2 where they can get a Bobby Witt Jr. 1-9, they're probably going to fall to someone like a Jace Jung or a Gavin Cross, which, not saying that they can't pan out to be dissimilar in talent-wise to Bobby Witt Jr., but you're still missing out on like the top tier guy at the 1-2-3 slot. So I'd love to see him go with a bat like Gavin Cross from Virginia Tech. That guy is just unbelievable in terms of on the offensive side. He's got above average tools in terms of everything you want to see at the plate. And he's just a guy that, you know, he's going to come in the organization. He's going to probably rake. And so he's a guy who can make a fast ascend to the big leagues.
Yeah, I think going bat in this draft is a must for the Royals.
Yeah.
The guys that are your best hitters in the organization are going to graduate from prospect status within the next year. In Vinny, and Prado, MJ is about to graduate. Michael Massey, Nick Lofton are about to get to the upper minors. So you need to start filling the lower minors with guys that can legitimately hit. Carter Jensen's one of the better. Eric Pena, they're all struggling in low A. A lot of the high A guys are starting to struggle offensively. So it's really the double A, triple A guys that are hitting the most, and they're about to graduate from prospect status in some capacity soon. So injecting a high level college hitter into this organization come July, I think it could have huge benefits, and it's a guy that can probably move quickly too.
Yeah.
That's what the Royals really need, is a guy that can come in and go get there by hopefully 2024 at the latest, you know, maybe 2025 if, you know, there's, you know, an injury or something like that. But within the next 3 years, I think you need to have this guy in the big leagues as a surefire dude. And there are so many different ways they can go with that. And one of the approaches that you see a lot, you see it from small market teams, but you see it from other teams. And this is where the MLB draft differs from the NFL draft. So for people that don't know, and I hope I explain this as correctly as I possibly can, and please correct me if I'm wrong, but every team has the same amount of money that they can spend on their first 10 picks. Is it first 8 or 10 since they moved the draft down?
Yeah. I can't remember. I think it's the first 10 maybe. But
yeah, I want to say it's the first 10 picks, but every team has the same amount of money. You can allocate that money however you want. And all of those first 10 picks has a slot value to it. That is the value of your pick. So I don't know what the slot values are for every pick, but say the Royals draft pick is worth at 9, $3 million. Just for ease of use, we'll just go with a round number there. The Royals can draft somebody, and if they want to take them at that slot value, then cool. Or if it's a really high-end guy that falls to them that they want to make sure that they can sign and give him $3.3 million, they can do that. Or they can do what they did last year and underslot to save money for future rounds and take a guy that would still maybe go in the first round. Like Frank Mazzucato was a first-round pick, but yeah, he wasn't going to go until probably the 20s. The Royals take him at 9 to go, hey, dude, you're going to get more. Even if we pay you $2.5 million, we're going to give you way more money than you would get at 27. So come into our organization, take that money. And then the Royals are able to spend and go and get Ben Kuderna away from LSU and Carter Jensen away from LSU and pay up for those second round picks. And I think, and there's a stigma that I've seen on social media quite a bit about Royals fans thinking that underslotting is just the Royals being cheap. and the and teams that are just crying poor and they don't want to go and spend on the best player. Because the MLB draft is so different, you're not signing these guys to come in and be a part of your team right now. So it's just a different allocation of resources. All teams are going to spend the same amount of money on their picks. It's just a matter of where they decide to do it. And finding gems in later rounds and going and spending money to go and get that kid to try and steal them away from a Power 5 program, because you're not going to be able to go and get Bankuterna in 2024. You're probably not, because he would probably go and be worth $6.5-7 million and not the 3.5 or 4 that the Royals paid him. So that's the game that you're playing. It's just so different. And so I want people to hammer home, like, this is not the Royals being cheap if they go under slot at 9. This is not the Royals crying poor at 9. This is not the Royals taking a bad player at 9. It's just a different allocation of resources to go and try and get a really good player in the second, third, fourth round that you may have to pay up for a little bit to get them into your organization.
Yeah. I mean, they did the same thing when they took Hunter Dozier and then took Sean Manaea, like the pick right after. They paid Sean Manaea more money. And so it was kind of one of those things where they're like, okay, we project this guy is going to be a major leaguer. We can take him at 115 or whatever their pick was that year. Then we can take Manaea later, who was projected to be like a top 10 pick, but got injured. And so they were able to sign him for more money. I mean, if the Royals want to keep making LSU mad, they can go and take Justin Crawford at 1-9 and then have head coach Jay Johnson hate him for the rest of their lives because he's taken Kudrina, Carter Jensen, and then it would be Justin Crawford, who's another LSU commit. Crawford's just a guy. He's a high school bat out of Las Vegas, and he's the son of Carl Crawford.
He's wild. Yeah. Like that's still, like, every time I say it is wild because it
makes me feel old.
I love Carl Crawford playing especially when he was with the Devil Rays.
Yeah.
God, he was so much fun.
Yeah. And his son has got elite tools. I mean, it's a lot of projection there because he's a high school kid, but he's got all these elite tools. I think he's fallen a lot in rankings around the 30s and 40s, but there's a lot of talks that teams are looking at him in the top 15 because they think they can sign it for under slot, but still give him enough money in order to get him to decommit. Or not decommit, but not fulfill his commitment to LSU. So if that's a guy that the Royals think that's a high-end bat that they can get, he's one. Another LSU guy, Jacob Berry, who's currently there, he's a college bat that just doesn't have a position. He's one of those guys where defensively you just don't know where he's going to play, but he absolutely rakes. And so he's another guy the Royals could technically take at 1-9 and sign for underslot too.
I don't think Berry would be an underslot guy.
Yeah,
I don't think he would be. I think you'd be full slot, if not even maybe a little over. And you have to do just it. Like, he's a guy you could legitimately put in your lineup in 2023.
Yeah, he
is that good. The hit tool is that good. The power comes with it. He is, a liability defensively. I'll just call a spade a spade.
Yeah,
like, they've tried putting him at third. Like, it's almost like Hunter Dozier in a way. But this guy's a much more polished hitter, a very good approach, great bat to ball skills, nutty batted ball data.
Yeah.
That if he is there at 9, that's certainly going to be at the top of my board of who I want the Royals to take. If they want to go under slot, Justin Crawford's a good option.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm strictly sticking with bats here because I think that's where the Royals should go. I got a name that Alex brought up, and I think a name that is super interesting is Drew Gilbert from Tennessee. Yeah.
Yep.
He hits the ball hard, plays a solid center field, has a chance to stick in center field, good speed, just a good, like, toolsy ball player. Nothing that's super flashy, but just a really good player. And a guy that the Royal, and you'll see a common theme with the guys that I want the Royals to take, is a center, like a center fielder or a dude that can play center field. And I know that it's a little contradictory when I talked about going into this conversation that you don't necessarily draft for need, but the Royals don't really have a center field prospect that's any good, or a guy that can stick in the big leagues. I think Nick Lofton is certainly intriguing as a center field prospect, but I don't know if he's an everyday center fielder in the big leagues. So that's what you need to draft, so that hopefully by 2024 you have your everyday center fielder.
Yeah, and because you look at a guy like Justin Crawford, he at least projects that he could be in center field. I think Jordan Beck from Tennessee is another one that does project to be a potential center fielder. So you think about the needs in the future. If Michael A. Taylor is not sticking around with the Royals, if Andrew Benintendi's on his way out and Kyle Isbell's moving himself to left field, you're going to need a center fielder. And then they're trying to do that, like you said, the process with Nick Lofton, and still questions on whether that pans out. He's looked decent defensively out there, but if you want like a stud center fielder, Justin Crawford's probably the guy that has the potential to really fill those shoes.
I would actually love Nick Lofton to be an everyday big leaguer in the Merrifield role. Like, you play him at second, you can play him at short if you want to move Bobby to third. You can play him in right, you can play him in center in like the AL East, kind of in the same mold as a Kyle Isbell. Like, I don't think they're spectacular athletes, but they're good athletes that can play center field. And just move him around and let him be your super utility guy. I think Nick Lofton has a ton of value with that because he's going to hit enough to play every day. That would be the mold that I go. Other guys that I love, at least early on, and you'll be able to find all of this. We are doing a Royal Farm Report draft guide that'll be coming out, I believe, at the end of June, beginning of July, a couple weeks ahead of the draft with, I believe, it's like 75 or 100 prospect evals. Yeah. Jared's doing it. I'm doing it. Along with Drew Osborne, Alex, and a couple others, we have a ton of names to go through. So it'll be a lot of fun. Be sure to check that out. We'll promo that a little more as it comes closer. But it kind of sticks along a common theme. I would love Gavin Cross. He's the center fielder for Virginia Tech. The ass-kicking chickens are trying to make their first Omaha run there and get to the College World Series. He's a good enough athlete to stick in center field. He's not elite athlete, but he's really solid. Absolutely stupid batted ball data, hits the ball so hard, has gotten into a lot of power. He's cut the strikeouts this year. He's walking more. That was kind of the bugaboo last year, was he was striking out a lot, not walking. That seems to have worked itself out there in his junior year. He would be someone I would love. He's fallen a lot because of the broken foot, but chased a lotter out of James Madison.
He's
Kyle Tucker. And if you know what he's done for the Houston Astros the last couple of years, I mean, that you get that guy to play center field for you in Kansas City, I'd absolutely love it. I know the injury has turned some people off to him. I know the swing is a little funky and people don't love it, but that's exactly what Kyle Tucker was coming out. Was a funky swing, a solid athlete. No one really knows what to do with him, but he's got a ton of speed. He's got a ton of athleticism. He's 6'4", 220 or something like that. Big dude that can go run and get it and can get to a lot of power and hits lefties fairly well too, as a lefty bat. Another guy that we talked a little bit about on Royals Farm Report with Ben Badler, Alex and Josh talking about, Cam Collier out of Chippewa Junior College, who should have been going to his high school prom, but instead graduated early, reclassified, went to junior college, and I believe he hasn't even turned 18 yet. And now he, after a great year at Chippewa Junior College, is tearing up the Cape Cod League. If you like the mold that we talked about with him is Ben Badler said Rafael Devers, and I about fell out of my chair, but like a Mike Moustakas, I think is it for Royals fans. Like, that's the type of dude you're getting in Cam Collier with a little more hit and not as much strikeout. It's the same type of solid defender at third, nothing flashy, but just good, bigger body third baseman that can hold it down, get to a lot of power with a solid hit tool. If he is there at nine, even if you still have Jace Young or a Gavin Cross, I would probably go with Cam Collier, to be honest.
Yeah, and it's hard because it's like you have to hope these guys fall to you at 1-9. So it's like great to talk about Jace Young and Gavin Cross, like, but are those two guys going to fall? I think there could be a better chance that Cam Collier falls there and you could take the risk. But like you said, what he's doing in the Cape now, he's probably rising his draft stock. So you're just wondering if he's even going to make it down to you at 1-9.
I think, what was it, the Prospects Live mock had him at 7, I believe, in the last one. Yeah, so that would be him falling just a little bit. Jace Young is a dude that I think might still be there at 9. I know the hit tool is dumb and is, you know, the pedigree from his brother. He's a second base only. So I think that, even though the hit tool's there, I think that will turn the Royals off because they value speed and defense, and he's not going to provide that. I think that's my only thing with Jacob Berry as well. Is, yes, the bat is fantastic, but because the Royals value defense, I don't know if that'll be the guy.
Yeah,
and go ahead.
I was gonna say, I know the Royals project aren't Royals, the Breno Prospects Live projected Jacob Berry at 9 to the Royals. Because I, like you said, though, the defensive issues I think might shy them away from taking him. He gets the comp as another Billy Butler, so it's just like, yeah, great, he's gonna mash, but where are you gonna play him?
Yeah, that's the biggest thing. But God, that bat in the lineup would be dumb. And you pair him with Bobby, you get that young of a lineup with Bobby and MJ and Kyle and Nick and Vinny all in the lineup. Like, you got some dudes that are just gonna rake. And I mean, that's your 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 right there.
Yep. Yeah, and it's like I guess the positive about the 1-9 pick is there's a lot of options that are probably gonna be out there. Yes. So, I mean, if you see Cross or Jung go off the board before 1-9 and you see maybe Kalia go off the board before 1-9, there's still options out there that could potentially be really good for them.
Yes, this is a very top-heavy draft when it comes to prep guys. Like the first three of the first four picks, or hell, the first four picks could all be prep guys in Jaxson Holliday, Drew Jones, yep. Elijah Green, and Tamar Johnson.
Yeah,
I would not be shocked if those four are off the board before a college guy is.
Yeah, I think Kevin Parada is probably going to be the first college guy, if I was going to guess, to be going off the board.
Yeah,
just because he just absolutely mashes, and it's hard to find a catcher like that that's going to do what he does. So I think he will probably be, if anything, the first college guy.
Is there anybody you're looking at maybe in that comp round around 35 that intrigues you? I haven't dug down that far. I'm really kind of focusing on the first that first pick, at least for right now, and kind of play the cards where they may after that.
Yeah, the comp rounds are a little bit more difficult. I think the Prospects Live had Carson Wisenhunt, who's the left-hander out of ECU, projected to go to them. The question I have about the entire draft is Kumar Rocker and where he might go. Guy who was potentially going to be a top 15 or was a top 15 pick, I think, believed by the Mets.
He was the ninth pick, and he was like surefire 1-1 until about the back half of that junior season for him last year.
Yeah, and I believe he's sitting mid-90s now in his first entire...
He hit 99. He was 90. He was 95 to 97.
Yeah, and so as a guy like that, does he all of a sudden increase his draft stock because he's thrown three innings in an independent league game? So will he fall to maybe that comp pick as well, and do the Royals take a shot at him? But that's going to be a big slot sign if they take him.
I don't think the Royals would overslot that far for him, because I think he'd probably, if I had to guess, he's probably going to go $2 million over slot, no matter like if he ends up falling that far. I would not be shocked if he's out before the first 15 picks.
Yeah, I agree.
Especially if he maintains the velo for the next month.
Yeah. I mean, I know like a lot of mock drafts I've chased a lot are falling into the low 20s. But I mean, if he fell down there to the low 20s somehow to the Royals in the early 30s, I'd be shocked if he goes down there.
That would be a scenario where I wish there were trade ups in the MLB draft, because I would go and trade up into the mid 20s for Chase DeLauder if he fell.
Yeah. A guy, Judd Fabian from Florida. He strikes out a lot. He's a guy who's mashes, but he definitely does strike out.
And he's so good defensively. That's a very Royals good pick.
Defensively. Yeah.
In center field too.
Mm-hmm. And I think the Red Sox took him last draft. So I think there's a lot of projection that the Red Sox might try to take him late. But he's a guy who could potentially follow the Royals down there. So he's another one I'm looking at. The one that Alex brought up in the kind of underslot picks.
Yeah.
I don't know how to say his last name, but Andrew Dukanich from Indiana, the right-handed pitcher. He's another guy. He's, I think, the best prep pitcher out of Indiana. I think the last two were both Royals picks that came out of Indiana as well. So the last best arms out of Indiana were both Royals picks as well. So he's another guy who could potentially go there.
The good news is the Royals have a lot of options they can go to in some of these rounds. I'm intrigued by a couple of guys. If Justin Campbell from Oklahoma State, obviously I have some bias there, but he's a guy that would be kind of fun to have in the system. I think he's a surefire big league pitcher, and nothing flashy about what he does, but he uses every bit of his 6'7" frame to get it up there. I think there's still some more velo in there. He's mainly been 90 to 93, but a really good feel for a curveball and a changeup. So the pitchability is really nice. And I think his fastball shape is really good, which is something the Royals don't have a ton of. And he makes, even at 90, he makes his fastball like it's 96, because he's 6'7", and his extension has been measured up to like 7'3" when he's pitching. So he gets on a hitter a lot faster. So he's still able to get it at the top of the zone, even without a ton of spin. Is the second round too high for Ivan Melendez?
Yeah. I mean, it's, could be a little bit. I think about the second round, he's probably projected to go around the 70s. So I don't know what the Royals second round pick number is, but I think it's a little bit past the 30 pick, right?
He's like a first base only type, like I get it, but don't overthink the bat.
Yeah,
like the he's the Hispanic Titanic for a reason. The dude hits absolute moon bombs.
Yeah. And I mean,
he'd be fun. I don't think the Royals are going to take another first base only type, but His batted ball data is another guy that's just ridiculous. And the power, I think, is certainly going to translate to a wood bat moving in from college.
Yeah, and another guy, too, that might be interesting when we think about Virginia Tech and all the bats that they have that rake there is Tanner Scoble, the shortstop that runs out of there. I think he's projected in somewhere in the 60s, but if they wanted to take a guy a little bit higher than that, he's just got a package worth of tools that are compact and on the dirt and at the plate, too. So he's just a guy who's going to be great defensively. He's going to be great offensively. And he's just got an all-around package that might be interesting to take as a college bat late into the second round or early into the second round.
Feels like a Royals type of guy just from the – you just described him there. Yeah. So that would be interesting for sure. Like I said, the Royals have a ton of options. It'll be a lot of fun to follow. The MLB draft is always kind of a fascinating time. And over at Royals Farm Report, we're going to have you guys locked in on that, especially over the next few weeks. Not necessarily on this week's episode. Alex is going off the grid on vacation, so it'll be just Josh and I, and we'll have a good time. And then once Alex gets back, we'll really get going on it. A couple questions before I get you out of here. What would your walk-up song be if you had taken a bat at the K?
Man, I thought about this for many years because I just didn't make it past high school. And I was like, same. What would it be?
Yeah.
What would it be like to have a walk-out song? I feel like the natural one is like Down With The Sickness would be a sweet walkout song.
that would get everybody pumped up. But the problem is I would get the pitcher pumped up too, and I don't know how well that would work.
Yeah, that's the first one that came to my head for some reason.
Hey, I don't – to each their own. I think that's cool. Yeah, no, I like that. And then so you obviously follow baseball at large as well outside of just the Royals. Have you had like a take coming into this season that's kind of been realized that you feel pretty good about across anybody in baseball?
I take that I've realized that's just kind of come across in baseball outside of the Royals.
Well, I guess like something that you had coming into the year, like a prediction or a take about a certain player that's kind of worked out so far.
Yeah. I mean, I can think of one take from last year was Freddie Peralta from the Brewers. I know that's not this year, but last year I was on him as a starter. And the next thing I know, he just exploded and he was nasty. He was the first one that comes to mind. Trying to think of this year, there's guys that I've really just kind of been on, and then all of a sudden they took off. I think Michael Lorenzen was one that I was really high on.
He's been good.
He got kind of crushed in his last start. But overall, like for the amount of money that the Angels signed him for, they got to be happy with the results so far. So he's another one that I've really been like, okay, yeah, he's kind of panned out. Even though he didn't do anything on the offensive side, there's talks that he was going to try to be a two-way guy when he went to the Angels, but then decided to strictly focus on pitching, and it's worked out so far.
Yeah, that rotation's actually like good. I hope the Angels start winning again, man. They're in a 14 gamer, I think, right now. 14 game losing streak. Like, yeah, we still need Trout and Otani in October. I hope they get it turned around.
Yeah,
coming into the year, I was really big on Sandy Alcantara. Mm-hmm. From the Marlins. I actually put in, I got him at plus 4,000 for Cy Young. And
that could pan out really well for you.
Certainly, right? One 6 ERA through 9 shutty. Wasn't a complete game shutout because it was nothing after 9 innings, but the strikeout numbers going for him, he leads baseball in innings pitched right now, not giving up a ton of hits. So I'm feeling really good that I'm going to get a pretty good chunk of change out of a Sandy Alcantara winning the Cy Young right now.
Love that.
Now, the problem is sports betting isn't legal in Kansas yet. It is. I think on July 1st it is. So I'm going to have to go to Vegas to cash that ticket. But, yeah, that'll be worth it. My dad's already said, like, hey, if that one works, then we're going to Vegas.
That's a nice little bet right there.
Oh, yeah. That was – because I just told my folks had gone to Vegas for a little weekend trip. And I was like, hey, I have three bets here. Help me out. So I had them put in for Bobby, doing Rookie of the Year. I got Wander Franco at plus 1,800 for MVP. I was like, that's a good value pick. Why not?
Yeah.
And then I was like, I'll get, you know, go and throw in Alcantara. I had seen him at like plus 2,200. Wherever my dad went, plus 4,000. I was like, that's going to work out nicely.
Yeah, that's real nice.
So that one felt pretty good. I feel pretty vindicated in that right now. I hope that sticks. Jared, thank you so much for coming on. Be sure to read all of Jared's work over at Major League University, Prospects Live, Royals Farm Report. Does a lot of it. He's as plugged into baseball as anybody I know. So thanks for coming on. We'll do it again soon.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I was going to hopefully leave this on a positive note, saying the Royals were up 4-1 on an NJ Melendez home run, but the Orioles have come back and tied it. So well, we're at 4-4.
Of course they did. All right, well, hopefully things are a little bit better next week. We'll talk to you all soon.